the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. On the line with me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. And also, he is one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And we are now at episode 367. We had a week off as we let training camp get underway. And so we are fully in the middle of training camp, and we have the preseason game, the first preseason opener coming up, Seth. Initial weeks. Let's just talk a little bit. So what are your initial training camp takeaways? We'll go into more details about other stuff, but just initial training camp takeaways that we've got so far.
Initial is that it's been a little bit of chaos, but it seems like this is the most aggressive training camp we've seen under Cliff Kingsbury, and at times it's also been the chippiest, and you're kind of seeing that there's a, in a good way, there's a bubbling like determination that this is an important season that we need to kind of shut out everything from the outside and really just focus on us as this team. And I think, you know, you're seeing that in the good and the bad, right? You're seeing that these practices have been incredibly physical at times, especially when it is, you know, time for physicality. And then you've seen that this team seems very, very close.
Yeah. And what I like about it, and it's a testament to the continuity they have with the continuity of players. They are able to do a lot of things that they're pushing, but they're also reserving. So they're not overworking guys, but they are still demanding things from players. They're trying to be smart about everything and to do everything. And, you know, there has been a distraction after distraction from the outside. And this offseason has been kind of a mess in a lot of ways. Even recently, we're going with the good and the bad. Before the show, we were talking about kind of the mess that the team has been on the outside of things. But we are getting near to the football part, and that's kind of what we want to focus on this show tonight, listeners. As we kind of go through what's been going on, we're going to talk about the DJ Humphries deal, which I personally feel is a big positive. And if we think that we're going to see any other extensions of any of their key players coming up, we'll discuss any injury concerns we have, the possibility of a trade, as there's a couple of holes on the roster that kind of stand out. We'll discuss the camp standouts and disappointments thus far. And as looking ahead to the preseason matchup, the preseason open against the Cincinnati Bengals this Friday night, who the players are that we think will stand out. So let's go ahead and jump on this, starting with the DJ Humphries deal. Unlike the Kyler Murray deal, which we were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for, the DJ Humphries one snuck up on us. Now, we had a suspicion that maybe there was a kind of a hold-in with the time that he was on the sideline with a quote-unquote, air quotes, I mean, GI issue, stomach issue. But then, boom, the extension comes out, and the numbers come out, and it makes him, like, in terms of contract terms, the number three offensive tackle in terms of average salary per year in the NFL. One, how surprised were you at the deal, and what did you think about the deal initially?
I thought it made sense. I mean, I know people get really caught up in this APY stuff, and it's tough to look at things and be like, DJ Humphreys the third, and then you look and you're like, why is he making more than David Bakhtiari or the guy in Baltimore, Ronnie Stanley, or, you know, these guys that have been Pro Bowlers and all pros? And it's like, because those guys signed 3 years ago. Like, that's just how contracts work. Like, I get it. It seems like a lot of money, but next year it's going to be $25 million a year for a top eight left tackle. And then the year after that, it's going to be $27 million a year. And then all of a sudden, DJ's number in his last year of his deal is going to be outside of the top 10. And people are going to be like, oh, yeah, it was a good deal. Because that's the thing, is like, all this stuff shifts. Now, you know, maybe it'll shift back and then it'll be like, well, they overpaid. But at this rate, the rate it's going, it's just going to continue to shift up and trend upward. I thought it was necessary, man. You and I have talked about it. Josh Jones was really the only guy under contract. I mean, Rodney Hudson technically is, but like, we've obviously seen that we're not sure.
It's a year-to-year affair for him at this point.
Yeah, and so getting DJ locked in, knowing that you probably are going to have Josh starting at right tackle as Kelvin ends his, you know, his very good career. And then, you know, you're playing the waiting game with Will Hernandez too. Like, Hernandez, I know we're going to talk about this in a second, but like, Hernandez is 100% the guy that, like, if he's having a good year, they're going to re-sign him mid-season or, you know, towards the end of the season, because that's the thing, is like, this is a one-year flyer, but also it's like an extended tryout for him to see, audition for him to see if he can get a good multi-year deal. And so that's the thing. So you come in and you're like, okay, now we've got our bookends, and they're both still sub 30 years old, and you've got your quarterback obviously locked up. You're starting to create the nucleus that we talked about, and that this team has had at times, but it's always been like, you know, a wide receiver and a linebacker or this, you know, like, obviously Chandler Jones has, you know, left the organization, but like, for the first time, it's not just Jones and Patrick Peterson. And even those, like, that overlap was like so short of when both of them were playing at a high level that, like, you never looked at it as like, oh my gosh, they've got, you know, an elite pass rusher, an elite corner. And so, like, all of that is like, all of a sudden you've got, you know, a quarterback and potentially two, you know, your bookend offensive tackles. That's a good spot to be in on offense, because all of a sudden, you know, we've talked about running back, hopefully the tight end position with Trey McBride will be locked up, but like, you, the running back and receivers, you can get those guys year to year and have success. Now, obviously the great ones you want to hold on to as long as possible, but like, we've seen Cincinnati, like, took the next step with a rookie wide receiver. You know, you go to Minnesota, they were able to move on from Stephon Diggs without any issues. Like, and Stephon Diggs is one of the best receivers in the NFL. And all they did was just draft Justin Jefferson and not miss a beat. Right. Like,
right.
And so that's the thing, is like, these premier positions, like quarterback and tackles, like, you need to lock those up. And they finally did. And it's just like, this is, you know, he's going to end up probably being one of the most successful Steve Keim picks in his tenure, which is baffling after the first 2 years.
Right. And this is the thing about DJ Humphreys, is I don't think people are talking enough about how significant this is. We're talking in terms of drafted players that the Cardinals have selected. The two players in Arizona history where they have made it to a third contract. It's Larry Fitzgerald and DJ Humphreys. And I want to, historically, the DJ Humphreys career did not start well. I think we need to recognize just how, now, Is he the best left? He's one of the better left tackles in football. He is not elite, elite, but he is as good as any good starting left tackle, and that's why they re-signed him, because they know what he has, and very telling as well, the situation he was in. He didn't love BA, and he came in, he came into the NFL immature. He wasn't willing to play right tackle when that first year. He's like, I'm not going to play right tackle, and it cost him an entire year. Then he had injury issues, and so when Cliff came in 2019, Cliff comes in 2019, and this is the last year he's on his fifth-year extension. When Cliff came in, and Cliff said this the other day, that they didn't know if DJ was the guy. And under Kingsbury, Humphreys has flourished. He got his body right. He matured. And he's still a goofball, but here's the thing. He loves football, and he's fierce on the field. His teammates love him, and his play on the field has improved. We haven't had a tackle. Like, let's go back to Luis Sharp. He, in terms of a drafted tackle, he's the best lineman, best tackle the Cardinals have had since Luis Sharp. And Luis Sharp finished his career right after the Cardinals got to Arizona. He's the first Pro Bowler. He's the first tackle Pro Bowler since Lomas Brown, and Lomas Brown was kind of a two-year rental when he had already had an established career, a long-time career with the Lions, and the Cardinals picked him up at the end of his career. And then he ended up going to Cleveland after that. But so in terms of players, offensive linemen that the Cardinals have developed, DJ Humphreys is the best offensive lineman the Cardinals have developed since coming to Arizona. Hands down, he's done it. And he cements himself into just a – and I think that's where fans still remember knee-deep DJ Humphreys, the injured DJ Humphreys. Once he made that move to left tackle, let's be honest, he's been very good. And the only issue – that he's had since moving to left tackle, let's be honest, was durability. And durability seems to not be an issue anymore. He didn't have a perfect year last year. His Pro Bowl nod, because he was as an alternate and it was a replacement, I think that had more to do with how well he did in 2020 that sort of got him his name, you know, sort of out there among NFL coaches and players. And I still believe that the Pro Bowl means something. I know replacements don't exist, but it is the one. I will say this: it is the one thing, the one honor in the NFL that is voted on by fans, coaches, and peers. And so that is significant. But here's the thing: the financials of the deal. I'm going to rail against a little bit. I hate the reporting of contracts, and I know it is to serve the agents or for whatever it is. And I don't even know why this was a big deal like that, because DJ did his own deal. He did not use an agent this time, and it wasn't because he disliked his agent. It's because he wanted to do this is preparing him for his post NFL career. But I think it is misleading the way, and it started with the DeAndre Hopkins deal, because the Cardinals, it was initially reported one way, and then it was re-reported. And all they do is to the years added and the new money, creating a false average per year. We saw that with Kyler. The $46.1 million per year is based on that's the money in the contract and the extension being beyond 2023. So that is not technically true, because the money, and especially since both Kyler's and DJ's, the last years of their deals were redone, which means it really wasn't a three-year extension for DJ. It was literally a four-year new contract, because he got more money this year. The salary changed this year. He got more money this year. And so the reality is it wasn't a three-year $66.8 million extension. It was a four-year $66.8 million contract. And I wish it would be reported more like that, because they're getting money year one, so it's really not a three-year extension. It is a redone four-year deal. And if we look at a redone four-year deal, he's now averaging about $17 million a year, which is, you'd love to see it. That's a reasonably good left tackle. And If you look at that, so he gets more money. So he was due to make about 15 million. I think it was 14 million in salary, $1 million in roster bonus, and he was going to count 19 million against the cap. So this deal works on all ends. Instead of getting $15 million in cash and a $19 million hit, he gets $21 million in cash this year, and his cap hits $12 million. And rather than having just $15 million and then nothing after this year, he gets $21 million this year and the potential to get another. So now we have to think of it this way, because now you're down to $45 million. $45 million more over the next three after that. And so I think it's the way that reporting about contracts has become a bit disingenuous. That's how they use it for rankings on things like that, and it's good for agents, whatever. But it's misleading. It's disingenuous because it was not really a three-year, $66.8 million contract extension. Yes, it extended his contract by 3 years, but it was a new four-year, $66.8 million contract, basically. So that's and I think I see no negative in this, because it got him more money, it got him more security, and it relieved the cap situation for this year, which was almost unnecessary. Now, they haven't done anything that with the cap situation, but that remains to be seen. It was a win-win deal. They know what they have. He's playing at a high level, and it gives them continuity on that line. And the way it's structured, they can get out of that deal reasonably okay after 2023.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That's, again, to your point, like, that's why you look at things and you say this was a smart thing to do. It put them in a position where they're going to have success and have a guy that they can trust for the next, 3 years. And that's in the Kyler, during the Kyler extension. And I just wish, like you said, the continuity was as important to fans as it is to organizations. And, like, trust me, bad play is different, but this is a guy that for two straight years has been a borderline Pro Bowl player. And last year, like you said, he was an injury replacement, but he made it. He's earned this and earned the ability to be on a third contract. And like you said, it's sad that it gets reported this way, but we also know that that's how it goes.
It's absolutely how it goes. Do you see, as while we're on the topic of extensions, we've got, you've got Zach Allen, you've got Byron Murphy, and you've got Jalen Thompson, who are all Marquise Brown, who are names of players entering the final year or 2 years of their deal who could be extended. Do you see any of those players, now that we've got some cap space? Now, I will say about any of these players, any of these players signs an extension, their cap rate, their cap number increases this year. Do you see any of these players as extension candidates before the season starts?
You look at it, you've got, so these guys that have expires in 2023, that means that they are free agents starting in March of next year then, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's Allen, Thompson, Murphy.
Okay, I just want to make sure I get it right. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it, you probably start with Thompson, because he's been the best player. Murphy, like you said, more important position, but Thompson's been the best player. Allen would leave the
biggest hole.
Yeah, Allen or Murphy. I mean, let's be honest, neither of those positions are. The other one that's interesting, and you didn't mention him, but Marcus Golden.
That's true. Absolutely.
Because they don't have anything. I guess they just took Sanders and Thomas. But, like, wouldn't you want Golden back for, like, one more year at least of that? I don't know. Yeah. Like,
that's a good point, Marcus Golden. I will say this. I don't think any of those gets extensions. Like, Golden maybe, if we're talking about maybe 2 more years, because he's at that age. Like, it's crazy. He's been in the league since 2015, and he's already in his early 30s, which is when they kind of go on from players.
Yeah.
But I think most of these players are not critical now. They, when they traded for Hollywood, based on what we heard from Steve Keim, Hollywood knows he's not getting an extension this year. I think that that was made kind of clear. That will be something that will be dealt with next offseason when he hits his fifth-year option. And I think the other guys are less about, I do not think that they'll get their extensions
during the season.
I think it'll happen at the end of the year. They've done that with a few players in the past where those guys get extended late in the year. And it's just to make sure, and Allen and Murphy especially. If there is one player, I think Golden could be one. But I also think Thompson is those two are the possibilities before this. I still don't think it'll happen before the season because I think they'd rather use their cap space that they have right now to bring in other players, acquire different players.
Let me ask you this, and I think this is, you know, one of those questions that a lot of people don't want to ask, but, you know, can you invest in Jalen Thompson?
It's hard.
I mean,
it's hard because you're paying Buddha
for $15 million. Like,
you're paying Buddha.
Because I mean, if you sign Jalen Thompson, and I can look it up while we talk, but like, can you really go pay probably $12 million to him, and be at something like 27-ish million dollars at the safety position?
That's a valid question. Now, you might structure it in the way that his deal then goes past Buddha's,
right?
With the Cardinals' history of third contracts. That when Buddha hits his, they might be ready to move on. And as great as Buddha is, you do need to consider his age and his body type.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because Buddha's contract's not up till 25, so technically 3 years. So he'll only be 29. But you look at it, Jesse Bates just got $13 million. Justin Simmons just got over $15 million. Like, the price is going up for these guys. And so, you know, if you look at like a fair comparison, you know, for what you've seen from Jalen, and I know he's not quite as good, but you've got a guy like Eddie Jackson, who just signed a 4-year, $58 million contract. Like, you know, so maybe you're looking at $452 for Jalen, which is what, $13 a year?
Yeah.
Like, I just, and that's not a negative. And like you said, maybe you can do that. Maybe you say, hey, the first 2 years you're going to be, you know, still this, but you got, you know, we'll guarantee $35 million. And your last 2 years, your bump's going to go up to $16.5 million a year to like help us out. So I don't know. I mean, like you said, Jalen's, from a playing standpoint, Jalen's the guy that's earned it, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, he was borderline Pro Bowl level last year. It's hard at safety. And so, especially when you play next to an all pro, it's hard to get. It's really hard to do that on the same team, but
right. It's hard to get both of your safeties in. So yeah,
but yeah. So with that, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move past the contract and let's move on to the part of the training camp we don't like, and that's injuries. Are there any concerns with the injuries that they're going through? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals are dealing with injuries. The good news is none of them seem to be major. It feels like, I think, that there's two potentially significant, well, the one potentially significant injury would be to Antoine Wesley, who might need surgery with his hip, groin, whatever it is. And it sounds like if surgery is needed, that's going to be a more longer-term thing.
Wasn't it crazy, though, when the news came out that, like, they signed Marcell Aitman, like, right away?
Yeah. Well, and
it was like almost like the same day. Like, it was baffling that it was like, yep, we know this is not great. And I know, like, Aitman, and you hate to say this, was a depth signing, you know, yeah. Like preseason, we need bodies. We don't want that to happen to Hollywood or, you know, but like, it was crazy that like it happened that day. And then they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we've signed Marcell Aitman. Like, you wonder if it was in the works already. Or like the injury happened and they were just like, nope, can't afford anybody else to get injured. So
yeah, with that signing, it does kind of feel like that the likelihood is that it is going to require surgery and they're hoping that it doesn't, which would be, it would be a really big bummer for Wesley, who is on the verge of being a serviceable player.
Just guys like that in general that like have fought to find
right.
their way in the NFL, and then they finally find the spot, and then something out of their control happens.
And like, that's been the case. That was the issue with Wesley when he was in Baltimore, honestly. It was his body was staying healthy. He got hurt last preseason as well. And so they kind of shut him down because, you know, but that's the, and then Justin Murray has an ankle injury that's going to have him out like at least probably another couple of weeks. That's less critical, especially with the depth that's built around. But the rest is all little stuff. And it's just the Cardinals are being like Kyler's wrist. Colt's got some arm fatigue. So Trey Lance isn't the only one who's got arm fatigue. He's got arm soreness. You got Devon Kennard with a little ab. You've got Zach Ertz with the calf strain. None of them are they're
what was the diagnosis on McBride? Did we ever
it
get
was
that?
Back tightness is what
okay.
It was back tightness is what Cliff said. And you know, we without saying what was seen, it looked more serious than it is being played out, but since they want to get him preseason reps, so it apparently is less serious than it looked at the time, based on what we have heard from people who saw stuff that we can't talk about.
Right, what we can discuss. So yeah, and it's just crazy, man. Because you look at it, like you look at all of it, and it's kind of insane because. I think the reality is this, and we talked about it last year, we talked about this offseason, like they're again razor thin. Like now I think they have more guys that they like in positions behind starters than they did last year, but their high end talent is clearly, you know, is clearly the starters. And when you look at it from that perspective, you've got guys, you know, that you're going to be overly cautious with, especially guys like Zach Allen who have a history of injuries, like you said. Like you know, Antoine Wesley's is a little different because it seems to be semi-serious, but you want to give these guys as much relaxation and rest as they could possibly get in this scenario, and then go from there. And so with that, you know, I mean, you and I were talking about it off the air. The reality is, in terms of serious injuries, unless there's a cavalcade of guys, there's really only one name that we're going to be like worried about. And that's, you know, that's Kyler. After that, like, while there are guys that are great and guys that play significant roles for the team, everybody else is, you know, at least replaceable for a certain amount of time. Now, yes, it could change things, and they've done their best to make sure, like, being without DeAndre Hopkins isn't felt the same way like it was last year. you feel confident in everybody being able to, you know, continue to be successful if there's a, you know, small injury for a number of games. And even Kyler, for that matter, with how well Colt played last year.
Right, but like, right.
Anything season ending-ish, that's a different story, obviously, for and like I'm saying, for Kyler more than anybody else on the team.
Totally. The one thing that we have, so they have thus far avoided major injury, except maybe Wesley. But the preseason games start, and that's when football happens, and that's tough to deal with. But it would be fantastic. And you know what's actually one of the best benefits and advantages the Cardinals have with the continuity that they've got? So they're in year four in the same system, and they've got players who've been in the system before. They do not need to rush guys back to get reps. That is one of the big... So with the exception of a few guys that are new to the system, they, like when a Zach Ertz, because now he's in year two, Kyler's in year four, it is totally okay to ease them back into practice because that they're not, it's not that they're losing valuable reps that they need. And that's kind of a good thing. Now, they do have a handful of players, as we're going to see, you know, with the depth chart. And they have a few guys that are going to play, young guys that need reps. So they're young defensive linemen. You got Michael Dogby, Leckie Fotu, Rashard Lawrence. You got Zaven Collins. You got Marco Wilson. There's a bunch of guys that need reps. And on the offensive line, you'll notice that Will Hernandez never gets a vet day off because he needs the reps in the system. He needs to get those reps more than the rest of the offensive line. But I've been very pleased thus far, knock on wood, that the Cardinals can make it out of the preseason with only minor injuries, and that, especially if it's to key players, that any injury is just minor.
Yeah, and it's been, like you said, it's been, that's what they're looking for. It's been difficult, but they've, you know, had some luck with it. So we'll see how, you know, we'll see how it ends up, and hopefully it continues to be that way, because this has been a good, you know, like I said, like the training camp has been one of the better ones I can remember. And it just feels like a lot of people down on this team. And so to see them kind of rally around that, I like that. And it shows me that their focus is, you know, they're kind of locked in right now.
Totally. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to the next segment of the show. We're going to talk about trades. Are there trade candidates? Are there players that the Cardinals should be targeting in the trade market? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And, you know, the Cardinals still don't seem to have a great situation at quarterback. A cornerback, that is, and in the pass rush. A couple of names that have come up, both Bears. You know, this is kind of going around the rumor. Like, one of my writers kind of suggested, hey, do it. And then another one he wrote on Tuesday today was, should the Cardinals go out and trade for Quinn of the Bears or Roquan Smith of the Bears? The tough one is because apparently Roquan Smith has requested a trade from the Bears, and you know, Quinn, it's gonna, you know, that with what's happening there in Chicago, that their pass rusher is not going to, Robert Quinn is not going to be, after especially they traded Khalil Mack, he's not gonna be happy where he's at. And so, especially a position where the Cardinals could drastically use an impact player, would Robert Quinn be worth the deal? Should the Cardinals go out and make a big move right now for a player like Robert Quinn or Roquan Smith. Roquan Smith becomes very funny because they have all the linebackers, but Roquan Smith is really, really good.
Yeah, he is. And you know, he's young, but he would immediately be in that he needs to get paid category, which makes it a little more interesting conversation to have, because then the question is, and I don't know, are we allowed to talk about where Isaiah Simmons has been lining up? I'm honestly asking because I don't know.
From what we can see on the open part of practice, which means he's been playing everywhere. He's been playing in the slot. He's been playing. It seems like it depends on the practice. Like on the first open practice, he was almost exclusively in the slot. And then this past Saturday, he was on the edge almost the whole time as well. That legitimately, Isaiah Simmons is going to be playing everywhere.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. So, like, if you're looking at him as kind of the what's the word I'm looking for? Like, as like the pseudo edge guy opposite Marcus Golden, let's say, right? And you're going in with the idea that you're going to play Nick Vigil as like, and Vigil's been good, don't get us wrong, but like as your other inside backer, then why not go get a guy in Roquan Smith?
Especially, remember, they looked at Bobby Wagner.
Right, that's elite, young, incredibly athletic type thing. You know, the other, you mentioned Robert Quinn. It's again a kind of a stopgap thing. I don't think it's a bad, I don't think it would be a bad idea, but like, and obviously when you're talking about going for it, that's part of what you do. But he's 32. Like, I don't, what's
his salary's contract? Not bad. He's got 12, he has no guaranteed money left. So he's got 12.8 this year, 13.9, and then 12.9 thereafter. But
so,
trade like that, so you could, now depending on how much it cost you in like capital, like draft capital, if it needed to be, it could be a 1-year rental because, you know, unless they went and restructured his deal to lower the cap hit a little bit, here, guess what? It's going to be a $12.8 million cap hit, and then they could cut him or trade him with no impact on the salary cap whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, to be fair, it's also a reasonable deal, you know, less than $14 million for mm-hmm. a guy if he rushes the passer well. So you look at it from both sides of it.
And he had 18 and a half sacks a year ago.
Right. So, you know, I think you look at it, I think he's, you just have to understand that, like, he could fall off a cliff at any time. I mean, we saw it with John Abraham, right? Like, when he was here, like, had a great season. They brought him back, did not. And you're like, oh.
There's like, also, you know, yeah. He had a little bit too much of the drinking and the strip clubs in that offseason before that.
But so, you know, there's that. What, I mean, there's some interesting names out there. Like, you know, there's been rumor-ish that, like, what about a guy like Marcus Peters from the Ravens, coming off an injury, kind of a big contract, you know, may not be a guy that is going to fit in with what they want to do, obviously, with everything that's going on in Baltimore.
That's the question, because I didn't hear it on the radio, but John Venerable, guy, the friend of ours, PHNX, one of the podcasters and writers over there, he said he heard John Gappadore on Arizona Sports say that if the Cardinals are going to acquire a cornerback, it's going to be via trade, which raised the question is, now, are we talking like a trade for a Marcus Cooper that nobody had heard of? Or are they going to go on and make a trade for a guy that people know is a starting cornerback?
Yeah, and there's a couple of names out there. Like, one of them, I just mentioned Marcus Peters. Another one that's interesting is Greedy Williams, who was a second-round pick by the Browns 3 years ago. So he's going into his free agency year after this year in 2022. And, you know, coming off an injury in 20, so he had a, I think he was injured in.
It was a 2020. He played 16 out of 17 games last year and started eight of them. So he was like their third cornerback in Cleveland.
Yeah. So in October 2020, he was placed on IR. That's what I was looking for. So, yeah. So you look at it, kind of fallen out of favor there. They drafted Greg Newsome in the first round. You know, that's really not a bad name to go. Like you said, like you're, let's be honest, at this point, unless you're trading for somebody that's super disgruntled from a bad team, it's not like you're going to get Jalen Ramsey. Right, like,
nor would the Rams ever trade Jalen Ramsey to the Cardinals.
Right, but no, I just mean like there's
that's
not
sort
that
of, right. And, well, and we know that the price, for an impact like elite cornerback is multiple first round picks.
Right, and so that's, you know, that's what you look at. You know, there's a lot of guys who that makes sense that you could go pursue. Right. Another guy that, like, if you really want to like take a guy off the scrap heap is like, what about like a guy like Cleveland Farrell out of Las Vegas that, you know, obviously he's done there. You know, you've got some guys that are interesting. I really don't see the game changer on the list. Right, like there's not one guy that you're like, oh man, if they went and got him. But you know, Marcus Peters is an interesting one, and obviously you're going to highlight the thin spots, right? So you're going to look at corner, you're going to look at pass rusher, yeah. And so those guys would be the ones that you kind of look at and say, okay, are these guys, could they be on the move? What would it cost? Like, that's the problem too, is like, we're still talking about premier positions. And so it's still going to cost something again. Yes. Like when you talked about it, like when Jalen Ramsey was traded, they gave up what, two first round picks?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, it's.
Well, the thing is, what I think people are feeling is that right now, even if it does, you don't have to go and get a stud cornerback, but you want to bring in a guy who has been an established starter, because you got Byron Murphy. And let's be honest, the way Cliff Kingsbury is talking about Marco Wilson, while he played a lot last year, they don't want to have to rely on him again this year. Funny thing, and I didn't see this happen, but I think Marco's has been very handsy in camp, and I think he was the culprit for a lot of the things. And they want him to develop, but I think he's mildly in the doghouse. I think that's a fair thing to say, that the jury's still out on him in terms of, you know, Cliff Kingsbury. Maybe that's a little bit of, you know, motivating to talk about him, but at the pass rush, you almost feel like, okay, they did enough. They have enough bodies there to try and produce something. So you got Devon Kennard, you got Dennis Gardeck, you've got two rookies. Something that cornerback, you don't feel that way, especially because you want to feel steady there. You want to feel stable there. And while Antonio Hamilton has been impressive and was okay when he played last year,
I mean,
if you got Byron and you've got Marco, you are really, really, really unsteady after that, and it's even with Marco. So if you can get it like a Greedy Williams, someone who's been a starter, Robert Alford, just a guy that you know could be a reliable starter, might not be great but probably not going to be terrible, that would just make you feel better, because their depth is so not great right now, you know. And unfortunately, Jeff Gladney's death was tragic, but it was also very unfortunate for the Cardinals as well.
Right. And people don't get that, man. And like, people are like, well, you know, he was a flyer. It's like, dude, they really did think that he could be a difference maker. Whether or not you agree does not matter. Like, it literally doesn't matter. But they saw a guy that could be a difference maker. And now, you know, they don't have that. A couple other names that I'm just kind of scrolling through things of guys that could be on roster bubbles. So, you know, you could see him. Bradley Roby, but he's a 30-year-old.
And plays more inside. That's,
yeah. The reason you don't see corners up for sell, basically, is because it's a really hard position. Yeah, it's a really hard position to fill. I mean, and that's the thing, is like, we can be honest, one of the bigger mistakes the Cardinals made was like Tremont Williams. Like, they just they just misjudged it, and it happens. I mean, it does. So, but yeah, I mean, like we said, there's different guys out there. I just don't see anybody that, like, you're basically locked into as like who you would go grab. And like you said, they've done a nice job at edge rusher, at least to bring in bodies. Now the names might not excite you, but like, that's not the question. The question is, do they need to trade for somebody? And right now they don't feel like they need to. So, you know, and that's how you have to look at it. Yeah, I'm looking. These names are not good.
There are a handful of, like, on free agency, old guys. Like, there's a bunch of 30-plus out there available.
Right, and maybe you can get lucky.
And maybe Alford is a last-case scenario. Because don't you think that if they believed in Robert Alford as a solution, they would have already brought him in to get him ready for this season?
I think there's two things. I think one, yes, I would agree with that. But two, I think that it behooves both teams to wait because he doesn't need the practice. He knows the defense. And everybody knows how injury prone he is.
The preseason's, the training camp's been really bad for him.
Yeah. So a couple names. Sorry, that I found what I was looking for. So like Anthony Brown from the Cowboys. I mean, it doesn't really move the needle. I know that. What did the Chiefs end up? Do the Chiefs still have DeAndre Baker? Or is he a free agent right now?
He was just cut.
Just cut. So yeah, I mean, so Baker is a cheap flyer. He hasn't worked out in New York or Kansas City, but like
there are a lot of parallels to Jeff Gladney.
Right.
Late first round pick, legal issues that got cleared up. Only he has played since then. That's the difference. He just hasn't been impressive. Yeah, Anthony Brown would be an interesting he's got a little bit of physicality to him. He doesn't give the great length, but he's more like what Jeff Gladney was, 71 tackles. He had 3 interceptions, got hands on a lot of balls, 17 pass breakups.
And then like one other one that I saw was Cameron Dantzler, who's with the Vikings right now. And you look at
they got those young corners that they brought in this year.
And so that's kind of what you're looking at is like, who are teams that brought in corners, and then like who was their corner? And obviously if you brought in guys to replace them, they're not great, but at the same time, like they
might be better than what you got
here. Right. So you just look at it like, you know, we'll see. They brought in, like you said, they brought in Andrew Booth, a Caleb Evans. They brought in, I believe, Shandon Sullivan from the Packers last year or this year. Yeah. And so like and obviously we know they got Patrick there. So, you know, maybe that's a name that they'd be willing to part with if Booth is playing well. But like, yeah, you're in April or August. There's not going to be a guy that just comes in and you're like, oh, he's the answer. That doesn't mean that they couldn't trade for a guy and he works out, but it's just like, you're not, like I said, you're just not going to be able to trade for Jalen Ramsey.
Nope.
And so if you're sitting here going, you got to do something at corner, those are the names. So you either like them or you don't. And quite frankly, they're throwing stuff at the wall to see if it sticks.
Yeah. Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about who stood out, maybe who's been disappointed so far in training camp. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. We've had a couple of weeks into training camp. We've had a few players that have stood out, and maybe there's some players that have maybe disappointed. Let's talk about the standouts first, though. I think the one thing in what I have seen in the two practices, I was at two Saturday practices, there are a couple of players that flash. And we've heard it's like Greg Dortch he keeps his name relevant. Greg Dortch, I think, has almost given himself a lock for the roster. And Greg Dortch has played well. I've been real impressed in I know Eno Benjamin's been the guy that's been getting to talk off all offseason, but rookie Keontae Ingram, their sixth-round pick out of USC, he's looked good every time he's touched the ball. Now, granted, I know Eno looked good his rookie year any time he touched the ball. But that's the one thing of all the rookies that I've seen, he's the one that's flashed the most. It stood out to me.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you've got different guys. We talked about it off the air a little bit. It's tough. Like if you're watching the line, it's tough to judge how a guy like Lasita Smith is playing, right? Like you watch it and you're like, well, I know that on some plays they're really going hard, but then on other plays, they're really not. And so you look at it and you're like, well, it's tough. And so, like you said, like Lasitas has been
and he's a development. This was after the Sean Kugler talked on Saturday. It's very clear he's not competing for the backup center job. They want to develop him into a center.
Right. And so you've got, different guys. I've heard that Josh Jackson hasn't been terrible, a guy we haven't even mentioned when we're talking about the secondary, which is
good. That's good. At least good news. It's not bad news.
So, so that's been good.
And Antonio Hamilton has earned praise from the coaches, and he's the type of player. I don't know if he's the type of player you want to rely on to be a full-time defensive player all year, because he has been primarily a special teams player. He's a guy you want on the roster. I don't know if I would count on him for a full 17-game season to be a guy that you want as one of your top three. That said, players can develop, but because he hasn't done it,
right?
I'm not. I don't want to say I'm ready to roll with him.
Right. And so you look at it, like obviously they've been, working him in, and he's gotten opportunities because of the injuries and obviously, like you talked about with the Marco Wilson situation. You look at the fact that we've seen a lot of, we talked about it a little bit, a lot of innovative ways that they are using Isaiah Simmons. And I think that actually does make it really difficult to grade what you would think of his work in training camp. But at the same time, he's been doing a nice job wherever he is asked to play.
Yeah. And it's, you look at it, he might end up, and I don't want him to be, but he's looked pretty good lining up in the slot as a defensive back. I don't know if I want him covering, Tyler Lockett. But the fact that he can do that, if they end up saying, okay, he's our slot cornerback, that alleviates some of the issue at corner. If you like using him off the edge, that also alleviates some of the concern at outside linebacker, because, and we honestly, we saw this early last season, he played a lot as on base downs as an edge defender opposite Marcus Golden, and opposite Chandler Jones, honestly. And the defense was great then. He didn't look great at the position, but the defense was great when he was there. And so it's going to be really fun to see how they employ him. I don't think they will use him as much as like at deep safety, because they already have two great deep safeties. But I think they will use him all over the place. They'll use him kind of as safety, but it's going to be more like a box safety. And I like how they came up. He's their star backer. He's their star on defense. They came up with a word for it, star backer. It brings me back to Dan Buchanan when they gave him the name money backer so he wasn't really a linebacker, because he hung out with the defensive backs. Because he was a safety coming out. He always hung out with the defensive backs. He was a linebacker, but and now Simmons is doing a lot with the defensive backs. It's really interesting how they're using him. And yes, it not necessarily that he has stood out, but the way he's being used in practice has stood out most certainly.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing that has been exciting has been exciting, what you're excited about is that you have seen a lot of innovation this year with the wide receiver alignments.
My first practice I went to, when DeAndre Hopkins was out there, only lined up in the slot. I don't know if that was – I'm sure that was partly to give Rondale Moore – reps at the X, because Hollywood was out, and Hop's going to be obviously start the season, but they're moving guys around more. Very interesting interview that Josina Anderson had with AJ Green, and I haven't got back and listened to his presser with the local media, but he only knew one position last year, and there's a reason why they didn't move guys around. That's why they slid Antoine Wesley right into the X, because AJ, he was barely comfortable in the offense last year. He at the beginning of the year last year, there was a lot of anxiety he was going through learning this offense, the hand signals, which goes like, if we want to point to that Green Bay game at the end, we didn't turn around. He missed a sign. He missed a signal from Kyler that he was going to be the guy. And he's now in year two. And so he knows multiple positions. They're using Rondale in multiple spots. I think the last 2 years, one, Hopkins' first season, you know, it was Hopkins' first year in the system, so you didn't want to bog him down. That it was a pandemic year. Then last year, also limited offseason. You expanded just a little bit more, but then he goes down, and so you didn't expand other people's roles. I think this is like the wide receiver year for the Cardinals.
Well, yeah, and it's just like you said, it's been difficult. I didn't even realize until in our group text we heard about it, or you guys brought it up about, like, Kyler's never had a full off season or training camp until this year. And now people will be like, well, he's been out, you know, but at the same time, I'm not super worried about that, because he did work out with the guy so much during the off season. But, you know, when you look at it, it's going to be interesting to see if this is the year that the offense becomes multiple, which has been one of the biggest complaints, right, about Cliff's offense.
Yeah, it looks like. And in terms of other players, Breon Borders, I don't know what he's going to do, but he stood out to me in terms of his physicality. I don't know if he was a little too physical in some cases. And I think of the rookie, like, Cam Thomas has not stood out yet. My J. Sanders, however, has. And really kind of, he looks, that was a pick that a lot of people scratched their head, because, you know, like, you're drafted an edge rusher who had 2.5 sacks last year. They might have had something there. He looks good coming off the edge so far. And yeah, I think he'll get playing time before Cam Thomas does, is what it looks like this year.
Yeah, it sounds like they've been really happy with MyJay and what he's brought to the team. And that, you know, I'm not surprised about the Cam Thomas thing. MyJay's at least stood up and done it.
Yeah.
Cam never has. So, you know, you'll watch it. I think like the disappointments are tough. Everybody's going to go with Marco, and that's just because that's the one thing that we've gotten from the coaches, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the one, like, oh, well, it's, you know, the coaches are worried. Well, I mean, maybe, and maybe they are. I, I, I don't know. But the reality is it's, you know, it's a very long training camp and off season, and the same coaches have really bragged about kids before, you know, and then been wrong. So you look at it from that perspective. You know, maybe Marco's disappointed a little bit based on just that he hasn't grown as much as you were hoping.
Interesting, though, Vance Joseph doesn't seem to echo that. That's more a Cliff thing. When Vance talks about Marco, and people, like, he was asked, does Marco need to have a good camp? I'm like, I don't know why Marco needs to have a good camp. He played well last year as a rookie. Like, even his downs, they were near misses. Like, they were contested plays. It's kind of interesting. Maybe he came in a little, he didn't, just needs to prove it, I guess. I think if there's one player that this disappointed, and I don't know if it's necessarily a disappointment, but I mean, it came more of the opposite. That's Hollywood. And it's not because he's been disappointing. It's just we haven't seen him.
We haven't seen him, and then he does.
And then he goes, what the frick, 126 miles an hour? What are you doing?
It was stupid. Like, whether or not there anything more to it, it was just, it was dumb. And so, yeah, Hollywood's been disappointing in that sense. You know what? I think it's been a little, and again, I'm not disappointed, but I think it's a little disappointing that we haven't seen a ton of Kyler out there with Hollywood, because obviously the Hollywood situation and then Kyler getting COVID, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Caught COVID after hurt his wrist, so you know.
Yeah. Allegedly. All of it's allegedly. I don't believe anybody. But yeah, you know, it's just interesting. I'm trying to think of anybody that's like really disappointed. I, like we said, the Trey McBride semi injuries disappointed. I think we've been more disappointed about the availability of players than performance. I think that's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it as well. And part of that is the Cardinals are being cautious.
They're super cautious.
And I think this is a league-wide thing. You know, preseason reps with three games are almost going to be limited to young players, and that's it. Young players or players new to the scheme, and not even all the players that are new to the scheme. Hollywood's not going to play much of the preseason. Hopkins not going to play in the preseason. Kyler's not going to play in the preseason. Like, of the significant contributors that we might see play, we're looking at the rookies. We're looking at Will Hernandez. We're looking at the young defensive line that the Cardinals have. We're looking at Zaven Collins. We're looking at Marco Wilson. Everyone else, they're guys battling for the roster.
Yeah, they really are. And you know, it's interesting because I think some people would be like, well, isn't it disappointing that Nick Vigil's getting so much playing time? Well, he's not replacing Zaven Collins.
Nope.
They're just moving Isaiah Simmons around. Now, if it ends up being that they're replacing him, then that is disappointing. But we haven't seen that yet.
No. And by all means, what we're seeing is that Zaven is playing the mic. He's just not making the calls. That's JT who's making those calls. And Nick Vigil is playing Isaiah's spot from last year. Or was essentially playing the Tanner Vallejo role.
Right.
Interesting thing. I'll give the depth chart. I know we weren't talking about the – I didn't put the depth chart. Like, there was one thing that I found that was interesting about the depth chart. Of anything else, Tanner Vallejo at the back of the depth chart. Like, it looked like he was a lock for a roster. And I wasn't sure he was going to lock for a roster because he's at the very back of, like, with Isaiah and Nick Vigil as the guys who are not going to play. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so is he a lock already?
That's what it looks like to me.
Or are they going to see if like Zeke Turner and Ben Neiman can do it? But I
think Zeke's a lock because he's
such a core special teamer.
Well, he's got this core special teamer and the skill set. He's a poor man's Isaiah they put him in the same role. So like when they take Isaiah out, they use him in the same way. They put Turner in the slot because, you know, he was a former defensive back at Washington. He does a lot of the same things. He's not as long and he's not as fast, but he has the same type of abilities. And so I've thought that in terms of the roster, that you're looking at Vallejo, Joe Walker, and Ben Neiman as maybe three guys battling for two spots. Maybe.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's
maybe
always
it's just Neiman and Walker battling for one spot.
Yeah, and it's always, I mean, it literally is always tough to tell.
But, yeah, coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the Mr. Carlos Talk of the Web, let's move on to the final topic, and that would be, who do we think will flash? Who are the players we are watching for in this preseason opener against the Bengals? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the Mr. Carlos Talk on the Web, and so we move on to the final segment. We got a preseason game on Friday against the Cincinnati Bengals. We're not going to see starters. We've already talked about the players that we're going to see, like the key contributors. We're not going to see Byron Murphy. We're not going to see Buda. We're not going to see Jalen. We are going to see Zayman Collins. We're going to see Marco Wilson. We're going to see Lucky Fotu, Rashard Lawrence, Michael Dogby. We're going to see Devon Kennard. No, we're probably not going to see Devon Kennard because he had the ab strain. And we're going to see Will Hernandez. We're going to see Eno Benjamin. We're not going to see Colt McCoy. We're going to see a lot of Andy Isabella. Who are the players that you think will, well, who are you watching? Who are the players that you're watching? And two, who do you think are going to be the guys that are going to stand out in this opener?
Man, that's so tough to say. I think one of the guys that I'm looking forward to is Keyonte Ingram. We talked about him a little bit. He's just he's the closest thing to James Conner in terms of size and play style. He's actually got a little more like juice than James Conner, but that's disrespectful to say that like he's more athletic or anything than James Conner.
He's
just
a little better burst.
He moves well for the guy that's, you know, 6 foot and 225-230 pounds.
That's the one thing that I've been real impressed about, is just how, like, wow, he moves really well.
I'm interested to kind of follow along with Gardeck, Sanders, Dimakije and Thomas. I want to see who flashes, like you said, like who's the guy that shows up and brings some pressure. I'm not expecting sacks. Sacks are in this scenario, you could get a guy like Gardeck, who's, you know, so fast and athletic, and they're playing the Bengals and they're not going to play Joe Burrow, and you know, they don't put their left tackle out there, and all of a sudden now Gardeck's got three sacks in the first quarter, right? Like,
right. We're not going to see a lot of help blocks, especially with tackles, young tackles.
No, show us what you can do, big boy, and see if you can.
That's what the Cardinals are doing. They're going to have Josh Jones and Josh Myles out on an island.
And so that you got that. That's really, I mean, obviously you mentioned Jones and Myles. I'm interested in those guys, but they feel like such locks that, like,
well, I want to see that they're not bad.
Right. I was going to say, I guess the only thing you want to see is that they've continued to progress.
Yeah. My eyes are on Andy Isabella. You know, he's had a really rough past couple of years. He never manages to be available with preseason games. And now with Wesley's injury, the door is open again. And with the Hopkins injury and with Hopkins suspension, the door is open for Andy Isabella. Greg Dortch, I think, is going to flash because he's flashed every time we've watched him in every opportunity he's had. And I think Keyonte Ingram's going to be one of those guys that flashes. In terms of other things, who's going to think? I think it'll be fun. I think Trace McSorley will be fun to watch because he's got...
He's a little crazy. He's got a little, like, Baker,
yeah,
Johnny,
yeah,
Manziel.
He moves really well. And you know, like the sort of excitement that Chris Streveler brought, only a better quarterback, I'd say. And then on the back end, like I want to see Marco play well, and we want to see Josh Jackson. I want to see these guys play. Like, I think, here's the thing. I think Josh Jackson will look really good. You know why?
Yeah, because he's got experience. He's going to be playing against second or third stringers.
It's like the summer of Blaine Gabbert. Blaine Gabbert looked great. You know why? Because he was playing against third stringers. And this is a guy that was an NFL first-round pick. He should have looked good. He should have been the best player on the field. And so, right. Yeah, I want to see – I think Myjai Sanders if I have to pick, he's probably going to guy of the pass rushers that's going to flash, because he is the most pure speed guy. So he's the guy that he has the get off to beat guys. Dimakaji, not super like, doesn't have elite athleticism. Cameron Thomas, he's still trying to, he can move, but he's still getting used to, you know, playing with his hands, playing standing up, playing the 2-point stance. And I'd like Zaven to be all over the field. I don't know if he's going to flash. I think he will flash more in the regular season, honestly.
Yeah, I think, again, it's going to be tough for him, because I assume he's going to get, like, maybe 2 series. But he had some flashes last year, too, in preseason, if you guys remember.
Yeah. I you want him to see play. You want Marco to play well. To not be, like, you want Marco to not get flagged for holding.
Right. We don't want him to continue to have the issues that he's already had.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm just preseason, like, preseason games are interesting now. No longer, because we would always, like, in the previous years, over the years, as it's kind of evolved, we'd want to see the starters look good. We're not getting the starters this preseason. We might get the start. Actually, no. We probably won't get the starters at all. Like, Kyler probably won't play at all this preseason. We'll get the starting offensive line against Baltimore. But we're going to get very few of the veteran starters. We're not going to see J.J. Watt. We're not going to see DeAndre Hopkins. We're probably not going to see James Conner. we're going to see very, very few people of the key guys in the preseason. Just because the NFL's changing. It's changing how they do it. And so they prepare them for the season differently. And maybe that's a good thing. And they're using all those reps to evaluate the guys below them to give them experience. Which, honestly, if you're not in a new system, I kind of support that. Because the preseason, you need to give guys reps who are new to a system or new to evaluate them to be able to decide whether you want them on your team.
Yeah, and that's what you're looking at. You know, you're wanting to see how these guys react and play in live fire bullets against not their teammates. And that's always difficult because, you know, they know, especially as it gets later in training camp, they know what the other guys are running and they get.
That's why Brandon Williams looking like an elite cornerback that rookie camp. Because he was guarding Michael Floyd every play, and he knew all his moves. And then when he had to guard anyone else.
Right.
Ooh, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty. All right. Do you even want to try it? No, we don't make predictions for preseason games. That's stupid.
1,000-0.
And I know I will be writing a betting preview for the Cardinals-Bengals preseason game on Sportsbook Wire, because I do that. I write betting previews, usually one a day, and sometimes two on the weekend, and when the football season, I do like. But please, if you're betting on preseason games, don't.
Call. I think it's 888 next step that you probably need to check in on.
Preseason games, there is, like, you're just throwing money in the wind. Maybe you win, but what? Just don't. Right. Don't do that. I will read my preview. Don't I get money? Because, you know, but don't actually bet money, because betting on the preseason is a crapshoot. You might as well play craps.
Correct.
All right. With that, I believe we are basically back on our every week type thing. We'll have a preseason game to talk about, and we'll have a preseason preview to talk about as well. Hopefully some other news of sorts, but we are basically back on the every week until maybe we will, yeah, probably every week till the end of the season. So that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roop. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.